it went straight down the middle. Then it started to...
Well, for our listeners, let's just quickly recap the professional career of one Ian Harold Woosdom. As he mentioned, turning professional at age 18 in 1976, he had 52 professional wins, including a couple on the U.S. tour, but 29 on the European tour, which is sixth all time on the list. One major, the 1991 Masters, which we'll talk about, joined the European tour in 1979. Highest world ranking, he was number one in the world in 1991-1992. Won the Order of Merit in 1987 and 1990. Also Golfer of the Year there in 1987, known, as I mentioned earlier, as one of the big five in Europe with Seve Ballesteros, Sir Nick Faldo, Sandy Lyle, and Bernard Langer. And I think we want to talk about that first professional win, which I believe, if our research is correct, was the 1982 Abel Swiss Open. Is that right?
The Abel, yeah, in Switzerland.
Abel, yeah.
Funny, that's the week before. We're playing the Benson Edges, and I played with Greg Norman on the last day. And after he won, had his speech, and he said, like, you know, he was quite amazing. He said, this young lad's going to win pretty soon. And it happened the next week. I can't remember too much about it, but I managed to beat Bill Longmuir in a playoff.
Yeah, right.
Billy Longmuir, and... Fortunately, Billy three-putted, and I managed to win. Poor Billy, I've played him twice in the playoff, and he's three-putted both times. Poor guy. Must hate me. But, you know, hell of a nice guy. And, yeah, that was my first win, and that was me on the road, really.
Yeah.
Yes, smooth little 68, 68, 66, 70. I'm not sure how many Swiss francs you won, but somebody converted to euros. I think it was 14.1 thousand euros. Does that sound about right?
15,000 pounds, I think he was, yeah.
Was it? Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Something like that. It's only money, isn't it?
Then took you less than 12 months to back it up with another victory, too, at the Silk Cut Masters, where you...
Yeah, 1980. Is that the next one, was it? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, 83 in June there. You shot another good scoring tournament, 68, yeah. 69, 67, 65, win by three shots over Gallagher.
Gallagher, yeah.
Yeah, Gallagher.
Amazing, yeah. That was in my own country, Chepstow. Yeah. It's funny, you know, you go through things and I just sort of like changed my putting grip a little bit. And I started all in everything, so it was just like on a roll. So I was that sort of player. I would be looking for something, tinkering around with something all the time. And then when I had something like, I always played pretty good, but my putting let me down a little bit. But, you know, I always found something. And when I knew I was going to get something, I'd go on a hot streak. So that was... Mm-hmm. That's why, you know, I put my thumb a little across the putter a little bit, and I don't know, it sort of stopped me hooking them so much, and that worked for a little bit. Then that didn't work. I'm going to have to go and find something else.
So that's that tournament, the Silk Cut Masters. Some people may not recognize that name, but it was known by some other more well-known names, wasn't it?
What was?
The Silk Cut Masters. I mean, it was the Dunlop Masters. It was the British Masters. I mean, it was, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It was Dunlop Masters. It used to be, then it changed to Silk Cut Master. A lot of cigarette companies sponsored the tournament in them days. So, you know, then we used to have the Benson Edges and things like that. So that was one of them. It lasted a few years, and I think it changed to another. I think it changed to the Epson a few years later, actually, a computer company, I think.
Yeah, we've got you down for at least one win on the European Tour. That was in the Scandinavian Enterprise Open in Stockholm, and that was by three over Peter Teravainen.
Peter Teravainen, I think Craig Stadler was right there as well. And, I was lucky. I think we'd been out partying the night before. I wasn't feeling so good. I'd had too many to drink, really, and I played the first nine in, like, four or five under par, and then I started sobering up a little bit, and I just sort of managed to get across the line. Yeah, sorry, yeah. It was thinking, well, really, I didn't play particularly well in the third round, so I don't know if my scores were there. So I must have thought I wasn't going to win or something. Sometimes, you know, have a few beers and whatsoever, relax, and let's give it a see what happens. Yeah. And that's what happened that day. And put it to it.
I'm not sure I remembered this, but I think Seve got hit by lightning here in 1977. That sound familiar?
No, I can't remember.
Yeah, it must not have been that serious, but that was in a news report I ran across somewhere.
All right. Tournament. I remember Lee Trevino getting struck by one iron by lightning. He says, "Only even God can't hit on one iron, can he?" Or something like that. I can't remember.
Yeah, that was at Butler National in the Western Open in Oak Brook, Illinois, and Bruce Devlin was just one hole away.
I was standing on the tee when they got hit.
Yeah. Right.
On the 14th hole. Boy, it was scary. That was the day that the PGA Tour decided that they had to find a way to see what was coming weather-wise, and that's what led to them understanding that they had not only have to get rid of the players, but get rid of the spectators as well, get them off the golf course. So, yeah.
Where was that?
Butler National in Chicago.
Yeah.
It was the Western Open.
Yeah, Western Open.
Yeah. It happened in a major as well sometime, didn't it happen?
I think they had an incident the same year. That might have been the same year that we had the U.S. Open in Chicago at Medina.
Yes.
And I think they had some weather come through there, maybe.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I remember. I played there, yeah.
Also a PGA Championship, I think, where they had some lightning issues, yeah, as I recall, back in the day. But anyway, let's move on to the next year, 1985, the Zambia Open. You won that one by two over Gordon Brand and Brian Marchbank.
Right, yes. Funny, yeah, I can't remember too much about it, but I think a few years before that, in 1982, was interesting because I had a hole-in-one and I won a Range Rover car, and that helped me a lot. That gave me some money to sponsor me for a little bit. I had to give 50% back to my sponsor at the time now, but it helped a lot. But it actually helped me to get, if you finish third in the order of merit on that little circuit, mm-hmm, it helped you. It meant you could play on. You didn't have to qualify on the European Tour. So I finished third, and then my first tournament was straight into, I think it was the Italian Open, and I finished second, and that meant I was exempt straight away for the year. So obviously kept going back to Zambia and everything, and managed to win that tournament, Lusaka Golf Club. Yeah, good little golf course. Might be going back there this year again.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell our listeners how it worked on the European Tour back in the early 80s in terms of what was exempt and who had to qualify. You remember how that worked back then?
Yeah, it was a top 60 in the order of merit. And then basically, if you're in the top 60, you were exempt to play all year. But then you had a pre-qualifying, you had qualifying score, which allowed you to go to qualifying on the Mondays before the tournament. So obviously they had a few other spots as well, invites and everything. So like maybe you had three golf courses with 20 spots on every week. So you would go there, 120 players playing for 20 spots, and that's what we used to do. And if you finished in the top 10 in the tournament, if you qualified, finished in the top 10, you were on to the next tournament. And then you try to get into that top 60 to be exempt the next year.
Okay. All right. So Bruce, Ian was talking about all the travels he did. Of course, he's off to Kenya in 1986 for his next victory.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll never forget that one. Was quite interesting because, well, Kenya is very, very hot anyway. And there you go. That's what we're talking a minute about. I beat Bill Longmuir.
I was going to say the name of Longmuir comes up again.
Yeah. I'll never forget. I think we played the 15th hole of par 3, the 16th hole or 17th hole, and he 3 putted there again. But I had shingles that week, and I was really in pain. So I did well to even get to finish, and to win was just a big bonus. You know, I don't remember too much about it, but I do remember having shingles. And, you know, again, the European Legends Tour trying to make these tournaments happen again for the seniors, and they've got that on the schedule for this year, Zambia.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to go back to them old places and play some golf.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't have to learn any new courses. It's going to bring back a lot of memories from the early days.
Well, if you get something like Oak Hill, like what they've done, you get them old golf courses, they just chop the trees down, don't they?
Yeah.
I'm looking at that first hole, and I can remember it in that tree off the by the green. I'm sure I did.
Some
great changes, obviously, at Oak Hill. It did look fantastic on the TV, and it's a great golf course to play there as well.
Yeah, it sure is. We had a second victory to talk about, 1986, the Lawrence Battley International TPC at the Belfry, and that was by 7 over Ken Brown and Jose Maria Canizares from Spain.
So that was at, where was that at? Was that
the Belfry?
The Belfry, right. 86, was it?
Yep.
Yeah, I seem to be sort of winning one every year at them when I was younger, wasn't I?
And I won or two.
Yeah, you sort of went into it and you think, well, if I can win one tournament a year, that's, you'd be happy. And, it's funny that it just, another thing which I just clicked onto something with my putter. It's funny that I was standing behind it and lining it up myself, trying to get it on the right line. I just managed to win sort of a golf course, which was good for me. It's quite a long golf course, and I managed to get around there. Plus, I played the Ryder Cup there as well.
Getting around. I want to let the people understand how you get around in 1987.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
Yeah.
Hong Kong Open, Jersey Open, Madrid Open, Hyundai Motor Masters, Bell Scottish Open, and Trophy Lancome. Boy, were we traveling around the world, six of them, and all in different parts of the world.
Let me throw in a few more here, Bruce. How about the Suntory Match Play versus Lyle?
That's right.
World Cup with David Llewellyn winning the World Cup and the individual medalist, and then the Nedbank Million Dollar Challenge. So how's that for a year?
Well,
only nine times.
Boom.
There's a story into everything, isn't there?
So what happened?
Yeah.
Well, here you go. So I suffer from ankylosis spondylitis, which is arthritic back, which is, you see people like bent over and I was diagnosed 1986. I suffered playing golf because I was so stiff and I could hardly move. I couldn't sleep properly. I'd put a suitcase underneath my mattress, so I sat up and slept like that. So in 1986, I went to, funny enough, the hospital, which was within 3 miles from where I lived.
Wow.
One of the best in the country. And I went there and I seen this guy, and he diagnosed me with ankylosis spondylitis. And he says, good news and bad news. And I said, he said, what way do you want? And I said, well, just give me the good news. He said, well, good news is you might be able to play for 10 years. I said, what's the bad news? He said, in 10 years' time, you could be in a wheelchair. I thought, that's not very good. Jesus. He says, right, we're going to put you on this medication, which was an anti-inflammatory. So he put me on these anti-inflammatories. And it was like, God.
Amazing.
I can move. And all of a sudden, I just felt normal. I could go to sleep properly. I could swing properly. And I just, it was just a relief to play without any pain. And I think I was just in such joy and freedom that obviously started. And funny enough, it was New Year's Eve. We had a party at my house. And I always had this little problem of hooking the ball. So someone said, well, why don't you hit a golf ball into New Year on 87? So we got this old sort of like silver paper, put it outside. So I was in my dancing shoes, what we call them. And then I took a swing and I thought, oh, I stayed on my right foot a bit longer. And I'm not joking. I went out and I stayed on my right foot a little longer, hit the ball higher. And that's how I won all them tournaments. It was incredible. Just one little thought keeping my foot on the ground longer.
Hear that? That's the sound of a walk-off albatross, a two on a par five to win a two-day golf tournament. That shot happened to me, one in 600 million odds. Since then, people call me Albie. Now, I've told this story so often, my friends can't take it. I'm pretty sure my wife, next time I tell her, she's going to leave me. So I decided to start a podcast to tell the entire world about it because it deserves it. It's the craziest shot you've never heard of. And guess what? There's tons more stories like this all around golf. And that's what our podcast is all about. Join me and my fellow degenerates, Panda and Shepherd, as we dive into them. Insane bets, crazy what-if scenarios, and all the you-had-to-be-there type moments in golf. Find us wherever you get your podcast. Did I tell you about my albatross?
Now, I'd have trouble pronouncing what you said you had, the ankylosing spondylitis.
Yeah, that's it. Very good.
One in 200 men and one in 500 women in Britain suffer from that same...
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's a bit unfortunate, but you just got to be thankful I managed to play as long as I did. And when people say, "How do you play with that?" I say, "Well, you know, the doctors have said to me it's the best thing I could actually do, playing golf and keep myself mobile. Because if you don't keep yourself mobile, you just all just seize up and then you get old very quickly." Don't let the old man in, they say.
Yeah, there you go.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, what a year in 1987.
What was that?
We outlined all those wins, Order of Merit winner, Golfer of the Year. Bruce listed them off. I listed a few. Tell us about that match play win against your mate, which I guess was at Wentworth probably, right?
It was a hell of a week. They had a big storm on the Sunday night, but before that, I think I played Joey Sindelar in the first round. A big Joey, about 4-3, strong guy, good player. Beaten by 4-3. So then I had Nick Faldo, beat him on the 36th hole. Then I played Seve, beat him on the 36th hole. It was brilliant because coming down the last hole, I've hit it in the trees right, and he's hit one down the fairway, and I get a drop off, you know, it's in that serve, like where all the spectators have been and everything. I get a drop off Andy McPhee.
I remember Andy. Yeah. So I work with John Paramore a lot.
Yeah, that's right. So I've knocked it down the fairway over the little brook. And Seve's gone with the three with slices into the trees on the right. And he gets there and he's in this sort of same line what I had. Well, he's going mad. Because he won't get it, Andy won't give him a drop. So he's gone and gets it. He asks for the chief referee, Tony Gray. So Tony Gray comes along and whatever. He gets a drop or he doesn't get a drop. Anyway, so I've hit my third shot and the pin's back right. And I've hit it into about 6 foot short right of the flag. Look, a little uphill or right to left. Seve comes, hits it about 7 foot behind the pin. So we're both on the same line. So he goes, it's him first. He puts down, expecting him to hold it, and he misses. It just hits the hole, comes out. The arms are up. You see that? This is to me. He's talking to me. Do you see that move? Do you see that? Heavy. Get out of the way. Let me have a go with you. Anyway, I knock it in, so I beat him. And then I had my mate Sandy. And, yeah, 36 old, beat him on the last green as well, so... What a hell of a week that was!
I bet you were spent when that week was over.
Yeah, well, it was never too spent to have a beer or two after it.
Yeah. So, as a Spaniard, I was always a big fan of Seve. Tell us a little bit about your memories of Seve Ballesteros.
Well, you know, he's sort of a strange guy in a way. You know what I mean? You either loved him or hated him, but you know, he had so much charisma. I used to call him like the Elvis Presley of Europe golf, you know. He was he's such a matador, and you know, and it didn't matter. I remember when we were in the Ryder Cup and when he was a captain, and some of the players would hit, and he's He said, "Woozy, you would hit that under the trees and draw it." And I go, "Yeah, of course I would, Sebby, yeah." He says, "Well, they just chip it out." They don't know what they're doing, Sebby. You know, he'd hit shots what no other people could see, you know what I mean? It was crazy. But that's the way he played by feel, and he was a character. You know, he was no other man. I remember playing with him the first time he was in Leeds, and we met him on the putting green, so we played the first nine holes. I was marking his card, Ian woozing him. I'm one under par after nine. I've had hit nine greens. I've one single putt. Sebby Ballesteros, 34. 34? He's only hit two greens. I'm not joking. He had like nine single putts. And I thought, that was another day. That was 1983, and I'll never forget. And I thought, there's more ways of skinning a cat, you know, getting a score. Right. And there's no pictures on the scorecard. And that's, I've always kept that in my mind. There's no pictures on the scorecard. It doesn't matter how you do it. So it was always a lesson to learn. Pardon?
Sort of conjures up memories of his match with Lehman in the Ryder Cup.
Oh, God, that day I was there, and I was quite laid off. And how he was sort of one up or something after eight holes, it was incredible. Anybody at Tom would have just cracked up. I'm sure they would have done. If it would have been me, I would have been swearing at him, you know what I mean? but I have played him in match plays before, and he's hard to beat because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that no one probably really knew him well?
I would say that, yeah. He was, to me, he was like a wild stallion, wasn't he? And he had them wild eyes, and he was difficult to. He had his own way of doing things, and that was definitely that. But he was a good guy. Yeah. We're all different.
Yeah, well, you were really riding a high in 87 and won at a lot of different places, one in Spain, one in Jersey, one in Hong Kong. You went all over the place and probably finished up the year with either the World Cup or the Ned Bank, as the calendar goes, I would guess, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, at that time, it was a bit of our party about, but we had to go there. The money was crazy. I think there was 12 players. I think you were on a guarantee of like $80,000 or $90,000, so you had to go, and it was winner-take-all. At that time, that year, it was winner-take-all, $1 million. And it came down to me and Nick Faldo. We're playing the 71st hole, and we're level. No one else hit it, really, and Nick has hit it down the fairway, as he usually does. He usually didn't, and I thought, well, I'm not hitting driver. It's a bit tight, this, for me. I'll hit one iron. I hit one iron just short of the bunker on the right, and then I think I've got about 160 left to the green, and Nick would have had about 130, something like that. And I hit this 7 iron and went straight at it. He went straight down the hole for a 2. Well, that'll do it.
Yeah,
Nick made a par, and then down the last, I think I made a par, and I think I finished 2 or 3 shots ahead anyway. And I mean, that was exhausting. You know, when you're playing for that amount of money,
a lot of money.
You know, I remember going home, and I was seriously ill all the way home. I think the pressure of everything just got to me, and I was, you know, exhausted, I think.
Well, how do you fit that great big check on the airplane too, huh?
It wasn't a problem.
Plenty of room in the hold.
Yeah, because I just bought the plane. I just bought the plane.
That's right.
1988 was a pretty good year too, Bruce.
Oh boy, wasn't it? Volvo PGA Championship, right?
Yeah.
Then the Irish Open, then the Panasonic European Open. And I tell you what. Look at the players that he beat that year.
Yeah.
Okay. Seve and Mark James at the Volvo. Seve, Faldo, Panera, Des Smith at the Smith at the Carroll's Irish, and Mr. Faldo again at the European Open. So pretty fancy year, Mr. Woosnam.
Yeah, you know, you got all them great players, not just, you know, the Faldos, the Langers, Sevies, the Lyles. You know, you had so many good players like the Torrances, the Mark James and Ken Browns. Mm. There were some great players around. And obviously, you know, you could talk about the top, the big five, you know, and you think that's it was healthy for us all, I think, because we knew we could beat each other. And every week we were playing against each other near enough and we're competing against each other and it pushed us on. And so, you know, you see how many tournaments I've won. And I think Langer's the same, and Sebi's more, and Fowler's the same. So, you know, there was a run there, so we all swept up a little bit. And then, obviously, Lazabelle came on, and then you had Colin Montgomery come, and they sort of, like, as we faded a little bit, we went and played more different places. They took over our mental a little bit.
Yeah, Bruce, you know, I look back at some of the fields in some of the earlier wins that Ian had, and you know, you mentioned the big five. They're all there, of course, but there were several other Hall of Famers in the field back in those days, too. I remember Bob Charles would compete in some of those events. Gary Player would be there. There were some big-time players.
Yeah, there would be. You know, we used to have some players coming over, and, you know, always they try to fetch over Americans. Corey Pavin used to come over. Curtis Strange used to come over. You always had players coming over. And a lot of times they did win, but, you know, which is, you know, that's, we were always sort of like, sometimes wished I had USA behind my name because, you know, could have charged a lot more.
And I might tell you too, folks, listen to this scoring here. When he wins a European Open, 65, 66, 64, 65, pretty fancy. 20 under par at that time. That was a record score, too.
Yeah, tell him where he shot that, too.
You tell us where you shot
that. It was Sunningdale Old, huh?
Sunningdale Old, yeah. Yeah, it's funny that, you know, when you have these streaks, it's, you know, I'm always going on about me putting. So I go in the pro shop at Oswestry Golf Club, well, the other golf club I'm a member of, and I pick up the Zebra putter. So I pick it up. It's a ladies' one. It's got a blue grip on it, and it's off center on weak, what we call weak. Oh, this is brilliant. So I go on the putting green. Everything's sort of going right of where I think he wants to do, because I've always pulled my putt. So this is just coming out sort of like an inch right of where I want it to. Well, I'll have this straight away. I just boom, boom, boom. And I just won so many tournaments with that as well. That was amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, changed the grip. It didn't work again. So threw it away.
That's weird.
All these little things. Yeah. So you go to 1981. We've got one win on the list. That was the Carroll's Irish Open, sort of back-to-back almost at Port Marnock in a playoff with Philip Walton. What was going on then? Did you have a lot of close calls that year?
Which year was that?
89.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I won that tournament there back to back, actually, wasn't it?
Port Marnock.
Beaten. Now that was an experience now, because now Phil lives right there in Malahide. So he is the local hero. So we're in this playoff and I'm thinking there's me against like 50,000 Irish people.
That's right.
eventually I win. Anyway, I win. And then I said, in my speech, I said, there would be no one better to play in a Ryder Cup with than Philip Walton. And what we did.
You won him over.
I won him over and I played in the Ryder Cup with him. So it was a great experience. Sure. Yeah. At Oak Hill. Yeah. 1995.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Well, let's go on to another big year. This is 1990, and four wins on our list, Bruce. Order of Merit winner, but in addition to the Amex Med Open, in addition to the Monte Carlo Open, in addition to the Bell Scottish Open, the Epson Grand Prix, this guy also wins the match play again at Wentworth. Beating Mark McNulty. But let's start in Monte Carlo because I have played that golf course. That's the one that's sort of up on the hill, on the cliff, overlooking the city, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's the one.
Yeah.
So I went to Monte Carlo the first time. I wasn't even, I think we just got married, in 1983. So we went up there and I played nine holes And I stood on one tee and I looked around and said, where'd you go? I couldn't see a fairway. So I played nine holes and I walked in and I said, I'm not playing here. I went home. Well, I tried to go home. They wanted about $2,000 to change the flight. So I tried to get back in the tournament, but they wouldn't let me back in. Oh. Anyway, so I went, I left and I came back. That was the first year I played it, right? So I came back and obviously I won. In a way, what I should have looked at it is that it's very much like the golf course I was brought up at, Clonmunnock.
Yeah. So
it was sort of like on the side of a hill, up and down. And, you know, is that one of the years I shot 60? I'm not sure.
Last round.
You did. Last round.
Yeah, part of the last idiot.
Yeah. One by five over Rocca. And Bruce, I remember playing this course back in the 80s, I think, sometime before then, I think. And I was playing a golf course. We had a pretty full kit on because it was snowing where we were playing on the hill. And I looked down and I could pretty much see our group on the beach sunning in the 70-degree weather.
Yeah, that's right. The sun, you know, it's a bit like Switzerland as well. You can be up there, you're in the clouds, and you just don't, you get your waterproof, it's freezing, yeah? So you don't know what you're going to get.
Yeah. So you won the Scottish Open at the King's Course. That was at Glen Eagles. That was by four over Mark McNulty. What do you remember about that one?
I played Mark McNulty. You know, poor Mark. I think he finished second to me a lot of times.
He did.
He always seemed to play well when I played as well, and unfortunately for him. And you know, when you played with Mark, I don't know if you've ever played with Mark. Now he's like, he's a guy you can't. He's one of the best putters I've ever seen in my life, and you know, you just don't know when you're going to win against Mark McNulty. And great player, steady player, and yeah, fortunate. Great place to win the Scottish Open as well at Glen Eagles.
Yeah, speaking of McNulty, Bruce, he got in the next event at home
at the Epsom Grand Prix. Is that what you're talking about?
Epsom.
I am.
Was he there again?
Yeah, he finished three behind you, along with Elizabeth.
He's got it three times on here, isn't he? I'm going to get it again in a minute. Yeah, again, you know, Chepstow, we played Chepstow again at St. Pierre, and won in front of my own crowd again, and managed to win that. I enjoyed that golf course. I didn't know it. I played a lot of golf there because we played a lot of pro-ams there as well, so it was one of my, I really enjoyed that, so I always had a chance of winning there.
Thank you for listening to another episode of For the Good of the Game. And please, wherever you listen to your podcast on Apple and Spotify, if you like what you hear, please subscribe, spread the word, and tell your friends. Until we tee it up again, for the good of the game, so long, everybody.
Whack down the fairway, it went smack down the fairway. Then it started to slice just a smidge off line. It headed for two, but it bounced off nine. My caddy says, long as you're still in the state, you're okay. Yes, it went straight down the middle, quite a way.